Mr. President, Mr. Vice Rector, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to welcome you in the name of the German Association for the Study of Eastern Europe. My name is Dietmar Neutertz. I'm professor at the Historical Department, and together with Professor Elisabeth Choré, running the Freiburg branch of the German Association for the Study of Eastern Europe, which is organizer of this event. This, of course, has to do with the fact that Professor Buzek, President of the European Parliament, is coming from Poland, and that Poland at the moment is exercising presidency of the Council of the European Union. Although the topic of the following speech is not Poland, but Europe, this double presidency nevertheless illustrates the prominent role of Poland in Europe. It is a great honor for us that Professor Buzek followed our invitation to Freiburg. And since the time schedule is very tight, I'll not bother you with a long introduction, but only inform you about the procedure. Professor Buzek will deliver a speech of about 20 minutes. After that, we will have time for a discussion, but we have to close the discussion at 3:15, because Professor Buzek has to travel farther to Bratislava. I wish you an interesting afternoon and pass over now to Vice Rector Schlengel, who will present his greetings and introduce our guest.
Honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, today we feel particularly honored by the presence of a very distinguished guest, Professor Jerzy Buzek, the President of the European Parliament. Dear Professor Buzek, as Vice Rector for Research, it's my great pleasure to welcome you at the University of Freiburg. We are very grateful to have you here and very eager to hear your speech about the future of the European integration, a highly relevant topic, especially in these days. But first, please allow me to give a more concrete picture of our university. Today, more than 20,000 students from 100 nations are matriculated in 160 degree programs at 11 faculties. As a comprehensive university, Freiburg offers a wide range of disciplines and belongs to the leading universities in Germany and Europe. In 2007, the University of Freiburg received the highest possible distinction in the Nationwide Excellence Initiative of the federal and state governments. The university is one of only 9 German universities to be successful in all 3 areas of the procedure. We received the highest level of funding, our Center for Biological Signaling Studies, BIOS, which was selected for funding in 2007, pools the expertise of almost 70 outstanding scientists and combines modern analytical methods with innovative techniques from synthetic biology. And as you are a natural scientist, I know you are interested in these sort of questions. The Freiburg Institute for Advanced Studies, FRIAS, is at the core of our institutional strategy and brings together research areas with particularly prominent profiles as history, language and literature, life sciences, and soft matter research. Thus, we are able to attract highly qualified early stage researchers as well as internationally renowned scientists and visiting scholars from all over the world. Besides excellent research, the University of Freiburg also offers, and it's important in these days, excellent teaching. In May 2011, the University of Freiburg was successful with its concept Windows for Higher Education for Excellent Teaching competition organized by the Standing Conference of the Ministers of Education and Cultural Affairs in the Stiftelijk Land for German Science and Research. With a grant of money amounting to 6 million euros, the university will expand the range of courses, offerings, and continue to optimize the quality of study conditions. However, our university doesn't only orientate itself towards national comparative universities and national politics. The University of Freiburg isn't located far away from the seat of the European Parliament in Strasbourg, and of course has a keen interest in exchange with this institution. Regularly, we invite members of the Parliament as guest speakers. The university has manifold contacts with our closest European neighbors in France and Switzerland, and is connected with the universities of Strasbourg, Mulhouse, and Basel via the EuCorps program, which enables cross-border studies. Our international European connections, of course, go beyond this three-country region. The university has been part of the League of European Research Universities, which has been in existence since 2002, and outstanding research-intensive European universities linked to each other. Due to the Erasmus exchange program, there are close relations at all European countries, and naturally our students spend time studying abroad in Prague, Tartu, or Warsaw. The University of Freiburg offers about 10 interdisciplinary master's programs, which are predominantly given in English. Those programs are extremely successful, and besides to the number of international students as well as to the international content, they contribute to the internationalization of the University of Freiburg. Contacts and cooperations exist in many ways, not only with university and institutions, in the old, but also in the new EU member states. Some of our offered subjects prepare our students in a particular way for working and studying at the Eastern member states. This includes the Slavic studies and the East European history, but also other subjects maintain relationships with Eastern Europe. Long cooperation exists between the History Department in Freiburg and the University of Poznan, and the study trips to Poznan and Mazuria, started by Professor Jan Martin, are of a special attractiveness in the study of the trip program of the Freiburg History Department. For many years, there has been a branch of the German Association for East European Studies in Freiburg. It's chaired by Professor Elisabeth Chauvet and Professor Dieter Neutatz, and each semester it organizes several events with the framework of the university, which constantly fill the lecture halls. I'm very pleased that this time the organizers have even succeeded in winning you as the President of the European Parliament for a lecture. The reason the President of the European Parliament speaks within the scope of a German Association for East European Studies event is due to that he himself is from Central Europe. Allow me to briefly introduce our guest. Professor Jerzy Buzek comes from Upper Silesia, a region where traditionally the influence from various nationalities come together. In 1940, he was born in Smilovice, a municipality that belonged to Czechoslovakia. Today it belongs to the Czech Republic again. After World War II, the family of Mr. Buzek moved to Chorzów. Buzek studied chemistry at the Silesian Institute of Technology in Gliwice, and has been full professor at the Opolskie University of Technology since 1997. From 1980 onwards, he was involved in the Solidarność Union, and in 1981, he became chairman of the first Union Congress. After martial law was imposed in that year, he continued his work in the underground. In democratic Poland, he was elected to the Polish Parliament, a as representative for the Solidarity Electoral Action in 1997. The same voted him Prime Minister of Poland then, an office that he exercised until 2001. His government set four important reforms in motion: a new regional organization of Poland, a reform of the education system, as well as reforms of the pension and healthcare. During his term in office, Poland joined the NATO and began negotiations on the accession to the European Union. In 2004, Professor Buzek stood for the party Civil Stage, the party of the current Prime Minister Tusk, on the first election to the European Parliament in Poland. In the constituency of Katowice, he was elected deputy with the best results nationwide, and since then he has been member of the group of the European People's Party. He even topped his result in elections in 2009, and then he was nominated for the presidency of the parliament by his group and was elected to it by a broad majority. Today, you, Mr. President, will speak about the future of European integration, a topic is covered by discussions on the financial crisis these days, but still is in a deeper sense highly topical. Before I hand over to our honored guests, I would like to thank the Chair for Modern and Eastern European History for organizing this event. Dear Professor Buzek, now I would like to ask you to come forward to sign the Golden Book of the University of Freiburg. Please.
Honorable Rector, thank you for presentation, for a few words at the beginning. Dear friends, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, dear students, I am very glad to be with you. I am also very honored because my colleague from the European Parliament, Andreas Schwab, is together with us from the same committee, because I spent 5 years of my first term of office in the Industry, Research and Energy Committee, and we were working together for 5 years. Well, tremendous and famous city, Freiburg. Probably not all of you are from this city, but you could get used to live in this city. I was told that this is a city with the longest sunshine in Germany. Certainly, you have a sunshine on your faces. I see it quite visibly. And they are right, because all the forecasts were that today should be heavy rain in this part of Germany. Raining, heavy rain, but in Freiburg is a beautiful sunshine. So it's absolutely, I found it absolutely 100% true. Well, let me go to one of the most famous daughters of your university, Madame Hannah Arendt. She once said, "Political questions are far too serious to be left to the politicians." Well, it's not very polite towards politicians, both of us, dear friend. Well, I would like to say that is not true, because maybe, yes, we will see also from our discussion, it will be quite clear. So, as a politician, I take this as a challenge to share my thoughts about the future of European democracy with you. And also, some discussion for me is very important. Because it's always putting the questions, you are also giving possibility for us politicians to recognize what is really the most important for our citizens. So your questions are of crucial importance for our work and for our activity. And let me say that in this speech I would like to see our situation and European integration from slightly different point of view than it is usually, it is nowadays. Because we say that we are in a horrible situation from the point of view of economy or financial disturbances. That's true, probably. But I would like to put a question of values and question of trust in the European Union. But of course we cannot avoid such a word like crisis. That was a first European Congress on ideas, European ideas, a few weeks ago. And it took 3 days, heavy discussions. And somebody counted the word crisis. It was absolutely king word for the whole discussion. More than 7,000 times was used in different phrases discussion. No other word was so strong. But also one word was almost as strong as crisis and used as many times as crisis. I would like to say it now, this word, because you must wait to the middle of my lecture. I will tell you the second most important word. But let us start from crisis. Many think Europe is in the crisis today. That's true. They are right. At least in the original sense of the word. It is not without irony that we learned the word crisis from the ancient Greeks. The Greek word krisis meant in the first place judgment or even decision. And the decision we have to make. It will not be an easy one. We have to decide to trust each other despite all that has happened recently. And the most important problem for us is really trust. Is trust something obvious? I would like to ask you. No, it is not. I would even say that trust amongst people is one of the most difficult things to happen. The history of mankind is a history of war and conquest, of slavery and oppression for thousands of years. One of the first books ever written was The Art of War by Sun Tzu. Perhaps in the past we had many reasons not to trust each other, but we chose to do so today for our mutual benefit. The principle, love the enemy, is also a Christian value, I would like to underline. Is indeed the most important teaching ever made. Having seen the darkest face of humanity in our wars, first of all, we Europeans chose to apply this principle, and enemies have become friends, at least in the theory, because it's not easy to change so much the meaning of the word and also to feel and to see friend in somebody who could be our enemy. Well, if Europe is in crisis today, it is because trust has eroded. That's my opinion. We need to gain it back. We need to remember our common values to make the right choices for the future. Besides democracy, freedom and justice, besides three of them, which are very important. It's also one other value, very, very important. And that was value and word second in this first Congress of Ideas. The word is very well known, solidarity. I must tell you that more than 7,000 times was crisis, and almost 7,000 times during the whole Congress was the word solidarity. Not peace, not prosperity, not democracy, not human rights. Solidarity. I think today is the most fundamental value Europe is built upon. Solidarity is not our destiny, it is our choice. Was it a bad choice? I do not think so. Against so many odds, our continent has changed for the better. But if there is a doubt, a look from outside can sometimes help us to see more clearly. From outside, let us say, from our neighborhood. It's more, very simple. How do they see us? When I visited Tahrir Square in Cairo in March, half a year ago, or Martyr Square in Tripoli just 2 weeks ago, one sentence struck me most. Thank you, Europe. We must stop for a moment and contemplate what that really means. There are people out there in our neighborhood who have risked their lives for our values, but today they are shared values, their and ours, not anymore ours only. They do not see Europe as a colonial power of the past. It's tremendous, but it's a model for their hopes in the future. Great, incredible change. I understand how they feel. I have experienced something similar, looking from the other side of the Iron Curtain, from my country, under a communist regime. We saw what we wanted. When my friends and I were building the solidarity movement in 1980, we made our choice. And the choice was also to name our trade union Solidarity Trade Union. We made the choice of freedom against the regime which decided what was best for each woman and man. We made the choice of truth against a regime that lied to itself and to its citizens. We made the choice of solidarity against a regime that was built on intimidation. We stood up for our faith, for our human dignity and our human rights, and we changed the face of Europe at the end, not using the power. I can even say that communist regime used power against solidarity for a few years with martial law, but it was not helpful for them at all. So I only wanted to underline the meaning and the power of our values. Sometimes we are looking at values and we try to find solution. Well, in economy, in social decisions, they are very important. I would like to say no. I would like to neglect anything. But maybe from time to time we should also remind ourselves of our values. Those in our neighborhood who share these aspirations must be assured of our solidarity. We have the unique opportunity today to expand our way of life, not through domination, but through the promotion of our values. We need to help democratization in our neighborhood and beyond. We need to make an honest offer similar to the offer Europe made to Germany after the end of the Second World War. That was not an offer of any united Europe. But generally speaking, first decision in 51, 57, was a Rome treaty. It's just incredible, fantastic decisions. Offer of solidarity and cooperation instead of war. And similar to the offer Europe made to Greece something like 40 years ago, Portugal and Spain, maybe not 40, 30, 33, Portugal and Spain 25 years ago, after the end of the dictatorship in all these countries, and similar to the offer made to the whole of Central and Eastern Europe when we found our freedom. Of course, we cannot offer full EU membership to everyone, but we can offer true partnership, which is also very valuable for them, I can assure you. Partnership based on shared prosperity and in the future, perhaps, a shared sovereignty in certain policy areas. The community method, which has made Europe the strongest economic power in the world, can be applied elsewhere. We need the three P's in our neighborhood: peace, prosperity, and partnership. Partnership, important. We should treat them as a partners. Very important. I think now it's even easier for us. For you, young generation, certainly very easy. Peace, of course, we need peace. We need democracy, stability. But there is no long-term democracy and stability without prosperity. So if I say three words, I add prosperity, because people in those countries, in each country, in all of us, in all of the countries, they also would like to achieve prosperity. Dear friends, let us keep ourselves still to the topic of values. Today, we also have to live up to our own values. Values that are such a beacon of hope in the world. We have to renew our European social contract. We have to rebuild that trust among ourselves. That trust. How will European democracy look like in the 21st century? How can we cope with the challenges ahead? These questions are indeed too serious to be left to politicians. Let me add, to be left to the politicians only. We should discuss all of us that, not only politicians. There should be not political decisions only. Our democracy relies on the free choice of free citizens. It relies on you. The level of individual freedom of we enjoy today has never been seen in history, but this freedom has also led to deep complexity. The most important point is complexity is quite simple. All of you, 4 billion citizens in our globe, are as perfectly and as well informed about everything as politicians are. First time in the history, 4 billion citizens on our globe could use, not necessarily using each day, could use internet and to read everything about the market, about the spirit and recession, hopes, and they're going to buy something or to sell or to invest. Depends on general spirit and atmosphere all over the world. So we are guiding and governing our economy all together, all the citizens, taking everyday decision. Should I invest? Should I buy a new car? Should I sell my flat? Because I don't have enough money to send my children to the university. It depends on market and all the information in TV. So it's our common responsibility today. So this question should not be left for the politicians only. We should think about them together. It's just a good possibility today to exchange some views. We need to develop a new model of governance that relies on direct links to citizens at all levels of integration. This is what we call subsidiarity. Political decisions have to be taken at the level which is most appropriate, most appropriate. Our EU should only act in those areas where the nation, the region, a city or a family cannot find the answers. But sometimes, like in energy issues, the best level to act is European level. Subsidiarity works in both directions. You always say, as many as possible responsibility down to the cities, to the regions, from the national level. Sometimes the best possible solution is to shift responsibility from the national level to the European level, the European Union level. I will show you some examples, because it's very important. It's also subsidiarity rule. Subsidiarity rule doesn't work in one direction only, in both directions. How much Europe do we need? I think in most policy areas, we need rather more than less today. Because of globalization, of course, it's a very good reason for that. Let me give some examples. Does anybody really still think that we can create better results with 27 dependent diplomacies? How can we make human rights count in our foreign policy if some world powers can play one EU member state against the other EU member states in trade or investment talks? This is why I think that foreign policy should be a fully integrated EU competence. In today's world, it is an extension of our internal market. The same applies to environmental protection, energy, as I said, trade, development, and other sectoral policies. Not saying about such a thing like prevention climate change. It's really a global issue. And for the global issue, 500 million citizens of our continent are much stronger and influential than each country separately. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can imagine, I believe in the merits of parliamentary democracy. We all can be proud to have established the first directly elected supranational parliament. I firmly believe that we have to pass from a Europe of diplomats to a Europe of citizens. It doesn't mean that it's the end of diplomacy, but you are influencing politics, diplomacy as well, much stronger way than it was any time in history. I am convinced that the European Parliament is one of the best places to do so. We have achieved a lot over the last decades. The great majority of EU laws and regulations have to be adopted by the European Parliament today. We are more and more becoming a bicameral system, similar to federal states like Germany, with the Council as a state chamber, maybe something like Bundesrat, and the Parliament as a citizen's chamber. Bundestag, not quite the same, of course, but more or less. We still have to go a bit further. We need to give citizens a real choice about who should run our union. As a first step, I wish that all big parties run a common top candidate for becoming president of the European Commission at the next elections. I also wish that in the future, all European commissioners will also be candidates in European elections. Elected first as members of the European Parliament, before being elected to the Commission from or between members of the European Parliament. We do not need to change the Lisbon Treaty for this, and it would grant the Commission greater legitimacy and all the commissioners greater legitimacy. We should also have national political parties run with the logos of the European parties, so that citizens know who has the majority in Europe. We should also use all the potential of new technologies to create the links amongst us. In this sense, I invite you all to connect and interact with me on Facebook or Twitter, for example, but in my colleagues from European Parliament as well, and many others in the Commission, commissioners, almost all of us, we have at least Facebook or Twitter. Together we can create a true European civic space. True European civic space. I'm just proposing you quite technical solutions. Because from one side, we should feel during the election, because which moment in our democracy is the most important from point of view of democracy? It's free election. Once in 4 years, 5 years, doesn't matter. Sometimes it's not just early election, could be in 2 years or 3 years, but usually 4 years. Free election. And for the whole period of 4 years, regional level, municipality, we say, we have elected you, you must govern. That's all. So, there are some proposals which are connected to the free election in Europe, in European Parliament, European Commission, because we would like to feel that we are united, more united. We need to be more united today in a globalized world. If you would like to answer questions and threats which are so obvious for our citizens, and they need us to answer their expectations, we should be more united. Because everything is coming to Europe from outside. Even crisis was imported originally from the United States. Let me be quite serious about that at all. And few last remarks. You remember probably the paraphrase by Winston Churchill, very well known. Democracy may be the worst form of government, except all those tried before. Well, we don't have anything better than democracy. And true democracy is never easy. It takes time to build a consensus or even majority. Majority is much easier than consensus, of course. This is why it seems to work slowly. Parliamentary democracy. As I said at the beginning, solidarity is not an obvious choice, but like democracy, it is the best one. We must have a choice, and we always have a choice. On the road of European integration, we cannot leave anybody behind. That is solidarity. If some states want to move slower, it is our responsibility not to exclude them. On the other hand, it is a responsibility not to stop us moving ahead. Solidarity and responsibility on both sides. Not to stop us moving ahead. We must discuss and we must try to convince, but we should always keep respect to each other. Our EU is a community of destiny and a union of choice. In order to make it ready for the future, we need to rely more than ever on the trust and participation of every single one of you. It means one of us, every single one of us. Let us continue to trust each other. This is our privilege to make such a choice. Choice on trust and solidarity. And I am quite sure it will work for your future, young generation future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for this inspiring speech, not only on the crisis of Europe, but also on values, on solidarity, and trust. I found it very inspiring, and we have now left some time for a discussion. The discussion will be run in English, but assuming that among the auditory there are members of the Polish community of Freiburg, it is allowed to put questions in Polish or German too, and we will have a translation. Dr. Faber fluently speaks Polish, and he will be able to translate. The answers will be in English, and we won't translate the answers into other questions. Please feel free to put your questions.
Thank you for your inspiring speech. My answer is, what do you feel about the things that we hear in the media nowadays about the German Europe that is very strongly influenced by what some people call Marcosy, the French-German power that gives pressure to the more less developed countries in the Union.
Yeah, maybe some questions then that I can...
Oh, we can collect.
I can also forget some questions if there are many of them, which, you know, is a very, very good political choice not to answer all the questions. If I'm ready to answer all of them or not. I'm just preparing yourself to be ready for that.
It would be tempting to mention or to go into the details of the present economic crisis. I won't do that. But nevertheless, one feels that Europe as it is now can't remain the same. If it is to survive, you probably need special institutions for the Eurozone. So what do you think about that? Because clearly there are problems, particularly to the Eurozone, which do not affect the other European countries quite to the same extent. I mean, they are affected, like Britain and Poland as well, of course, but not to the same extent. And if you don't have particular institutions for the Eurozone, what we will have in the end is some sort of informal government by Paris and Berlin, and I don't think the other countries will particularly like that. And the second point is, you mentioned the European Commission. It's all very nice to have the commissioners as elected members of the European Parliament, but if the Commission is to wield more authority in the present crisis, the authority of the Commission, I think, has clearly declined very much. If it is to wield more authority, I think we need a Commission which is like a government, so there can't be a rule that every European state has one commission. I mean, there isn't a German government. I mean, there normally would be a minister of a German government who comes from Nordrhein-Westfalen. But there's no rule that there has to be a cabinet minister from Saarland or Bremerhaven, or Bremen even, so perhaps from Hamburg. But so I think we have to waive these rules, and if you don't manage to do that, I'm very pessimistic about the future, because many people would acknowledge the ideal of solidarity, but when it comes down to define what solidarity really means, I think the conflict really starts.
Yep, just a question regarding your speech. I've listened carefully, and a problem I have is with the first part and the second part. In the first part, you've really concentrated on the necessity of common values and also on solidarity. And the second part, you stress the necessity of further European integration. Don't you think that these two can actually conflict, that the European integration is already at a point where those common values and solidarity can be cast a doubt upon? Maybe you can answer that question with reference to the United Kingdom and the current debate on the financial transaction tax and the Robin Hood tax.
Thank you.
Well, I think the first question and your first question are very similar, as a matter of fact, because you ask about this duet, which is taking many decisions at the beginning, Madame Chancellor Merkel and Mr. President Sarkozy, so connected with the Eurozone question, as a matter of fact, because we should say very clearly that if we would like to overcome the crisis, we must take tough, strong, and sometimes very quick decisions. In the case of full democracy, as I said also in my speech, it takes time. Democracy takes time. In your parliament, in Bundestag, probably a few months. It's rather not too long period, half a year, for example, for legislation. Because it's necessary to discuss, also with public opinion, with journalists. If we have a fast track of legislation, we can say a few weeks, but that's all, from time to time. In the case of European Parliament and discussion with the Council, it could take even 1 year, even more sometimes, if we want to discuss also in all the European regions. We can also promote something like fast track, and we can change from 1 year to 3 months. If we want to be responsible in democracy, is no way to act on different path. And what has happened? Now for Eurozone, we need very strong, unusual decisions which are not written in any treaty. It is unacceptable that we should wait 1 year for the decision. And it was also unexpected. There was not expected that something like that could happen. So if we have some decision taken between two partners at the beginning, and immediately, in a few days, or 2 or 3 weeks, they are discussed between 17 members of Eurozone, I think it's okay at the beginning. But we must think how to spread the discussion on the whole European Union and prevent division and prevent two-speed Europe. It's very important responsibility. Because as you know, markets react in minutes or hours or days, but not in weeks or months, because it's impossible to react so slowly for the markets. So from this point of view, the beginning between Germany and France could be maybe 4 or 5 partners at the beginning. But it's not a big difference. All these proposals are discussed later between 17 member states. And also, all the 27 could influence the decision at the end. But there is some doubts if we can keep such a solution for the European Union for a longer period. We should go as quick as possible to the solutions for all 27. It is very difficult because the next question was about Great Britain, and it will be not easy with some member states. We know them very well. It's first of all United Kingdom, is also Czech Republic, could be also Hungary recently, sometimes Sweden, but not very much. Because we have also another very important construction inside the European Union, so-called Euro Plus Pact. And one construction is 17 members of the Eurozone, responsible for Greece today, and how to help Greece, how to strengthen so-called European financial stability facility. It's something like a big amount of money for support such a country like Greece. I'm saying it in very simplest possible way. And we also should respond our banking system, which would like to be supported from outside, I mean from our budgets, for example. So we have a lot of answers for the very, very beginning, short-term answers. And the answers are given by 17 members of Eurozone, because the whole crisis of instability and sovereign debt crisis is as a matter of fact inside Eurozone, or even inside two or three members of Eurozone. So it's not the real crisis. It's crisis of financial instability. So they are taking decisions, and we would like to spread the decision for the whole European Union, 27 member states, but also we need some decisions on structural reform. Labor market, for example, pension system, and others. Structural reforms, taxation. And 23 countries, or even 24, together with Sweden, and without Czech Republic, Hungary, and Great Britain, they would like to go together with the structural reforms, very important signal. So we have a division of European Union, which is very complicated now, 17. Sometimes we have even trouble with 17, because one or second country wouldn't like to support the others. The similar situation was, such a situation was in Slovakia a few weeks ago. We were waiting, 17 countries, 16 countries were waiting for decision in Slovakia. So sometimes less than 17, but 17 is Eurozone, 23 Euro plus pact, 27 the whole European Union. You can answer also the question, you can ask me a question, why the United Kingdom is opposing integration? It's a very interesting question. I think they are very much united in the global scale, in the Commonwealth. We must remember about that. They feel that all the time. And they have additional relations, United Kingdom, with all the countries all over the world, like Pakistan, Australia, Canada, and so on, so on. Maybe that's the reason, I don't know. Or special relations with the United States. But it's a trouble for the European Union, because our partner, United Kingdom, is not ready to go forward with European integration. That's true. So as you see, it's not easy to convince all the member states for very difficult and tough decisions. So that is the reason that sometimes the decisions are taken at the beginning by 2, 3, 4, 7, 17 member states. But let us take care that all the decisions will be in the future decisions for the whole European Union, like it was similarly. It's not quite the same, but similar situation was in Schengen area, because at the beginning was intergovernmental decision. And now it's not so much intergovernmental, it is a decision by the whole European Union. But if we go back to the European Commission, we can also say that we have created Lisbon Treaty, it is working now, and spirit of community and community institutions should prevail on the basis of Lisbon Treaty. But unfortunately it's not the case now. We don't feel it very much. And I must say very honestly that member states, separate member states, they are rather opposing many changes which are written in the Lisbon Treaty. There are many reasons for that. One of the reasons is, of course, crisis. And in the time of crisis, we just have such a direction to close ourselves, or maybe to take decisions in the smaller company. Yeah, but it's a wrong way, I'm quite sure of that. We should not divide ourselves in the time of crisis. We should rather support each other and open to create a single market. We cannot even imagine what would happen without single market in the European Union. Our small and medium enterprises, companies, could trade all over the Union. It's the same with energy. We should build common energy market. Very important, cross-border connections. Energy security, lower prices for energy, because on a bigger market, certainly, the prices for energy could be lower. But we must create such a market. We haven't created yet such a market. So we have a lot of expectations from point of view of good governance and governance from the European Union level. European Commission should be similar to the European government. It's quite obvious. We are far away from the solution in the United States, of course. They have also on the level of state, each state, United States, in each state, they have government, everything. A parliament, government, everything's working. It's like prime minister, well, they don't have actually prime minister, but administration. So everything is working like in the member states today. But of course, it took them 250 years. So we have a lot of time for that. Now we are on the level of the national states, which would like to cooperate, not all of them on the same level. And I'm quite sure that we will solve in the near future, we will solve all our economic problems. But as a matter of fact, the core issue is a still issue of values, because I'm quite sure that we forgot about that and we can rebuild it on this basis.
We again collect questions. You were the first.
Yes, President Buzek, Eric Schüler, I'm with the Department of Political Science. Usually we take our students to Strasbourg, and especially with the help of Andreas Schwab, that's always a great opportunity, but it's even better to have you here in Freiburg, so thank you for stopping by on your way to the next official meeting. Could you also maybe comment on last week's debate that was going on, also sort of stimulated by Angela Merkel's proposal to look into maybe a treaty reform or amending the current treaty? How would you comment on just 1.5 years after Lisbon went into effect that we are talking about a new treaty reform? Is that realistic? And how would you position yourself, the European Parliament, within this debate? There was a lot of criticism that Angela Merkel, Nicolas Sarkozy are now running the crisis debate like the Vienna Congress. I think Martin Schulz came up with a quote yesterday at the debate. So how can we bring back the institutions? You mentioned the community method. So is the treaty reform the right way, or are there enough measures left for the institutions to also be part of this crisis management? And finally, could you also comment on maybe Poland's role in saving Europe? We heard a lot about the German method, but I think the debate should not forget the role of Poland, especially the huge influence. Especially in the last few years, we hear a lot of good things out of Poland, not just from an economic perspective, but also the roots of solidarity. You mentioned it. It's always a proud moment when we walk by the flagpoles in front of the Strasbourg Parliament and we see that they are from Gdansk, from the shipyard where everything started back in 81. So is Poland also a country that has a European approach? And could you maybe comment on the latest developments with a Polish perspective? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Mr. Buzek, thank you for your fascinating speech. We referred to your speech, you were saying that we are a union of solidarity and the union not of destiny but of choice. But where is the choice? Where remains the choice if the market pressure is so high that our leaders of the biggest countries in Europe, of Italy and Greece, but Greece as a bad example, but Italy anyway, has to leave? That the market pressure is so high that the legitimacy of the people does not count anymore, but further, some debit ways, what means that when Italy has to pay more for credits, that Mr. Berlusconi has to leave, and Mr. Monti comes in, where is the sovereignty of the people? And why are we such in pressure, and do we still have the choice you spoke about? Thank you.
Panie profesorze, Europa i cały świat dążył do właściwie takiego dużego konsumowania. Również polityka wspierała te wszystkie ruchy. Teraz nagle wszyscy mamy oszczędzać. Jak doświadczenia z lat Solidarności, z lat, które obaj pamiętamy, gdzie nie było dużo możliwości zakupów, jak te doświadczenia z tamtych czasów pomagają Panu teraz kierować w Europie w kryzysie, ponieważ spotyka się Pan drugi raz z kryzysem, tak poważnym kryzysem politycznym i ekonomicznym w swoim życiu.
Also die Frage bezieht sich darauf, dass Europa lange in vieler Hinsicht vom Konsum gelebt hat. Und jetzt sind wir plötzlich in einer Situation, wo wir den Gürtel enger schnallen und sparen müssen. Und Robert hat gefragt, inwieweit in dieser Situation Herr Buzek und Polen überhaupt zur Lösung des Problems beitragen kann, weil gerade Polen schon mal in einer Krise gewesen ist, wo es mit dem Wohlstand nicht besonders gut ausgesehen hat und jetzt vielleicht in der Situation ist, Europa gerade in dieser Krise besonders gut helfen zu können.
No, well, thank you very much. A lot of treaty changes. I would like to be rather concise, not to speak too much, but let me say very clearly that we should use all the solutions which are written in the Lisbon Treaty to improve our economic governance in the European Union. European economic governance. And because not everything is written in the treaty, there are also some empty pages. As usual, in each constitution, in each regulation. And we should fulfill these empty pages, not against the spirit of the treaty, not against the letter, but in accordance, and to use all the solutions possible on the basis of Lisbon Treaty to improve and strengthen our economic governance. And at the end of such a process, we should maybe propose any treaty changes. I am quite sure, and I have been asking the President of the European Commission since beginning of October, 2 months, to go ahead with all the possible solutions on the basis of treaty changes, on the basis of Lisbon Treaty, in the direction of strengthening economic governance. And we've heard yesterday in the discussion in the European Parliament in the morning at least 7 or 8 proposals which could be based on the Lisbon Treaty itself without any changes. Like, for example, Eurobonds. I don't know if you would like agree on Eurobonds. But it's possible to create them on the basis of existing treaty. So it's not necessary even to improve this part of the treaty which is connected with Eurozone. So let us use all the possibilities today and then maybe to sweep towards treaty change. Why? Because we cannot respond to today's crisis, recent crisis and current crisis by the treaty changes. Because treaty changes in the best possible way, it is at least 3 years. And we need answer in few days, few weeks, maybe few months, but not few years. So treaty change is no answer for the crisis today. Maybe we need treaty changes, and we should do that after long discussion. maybe for some other reasons. Maybe we can improve in the future our economic governance in the European Union, but not today. We can do a lot of things, a lot of different decisions on the basis of Lisbon Treaty. Of course, I understand that the limited treaty changes, which could give additional possibility, for example, in your country, in Germany, maybe in some other countries, to tackle the problem of current crisis easier. Such a limited treaty changes could be helpful for the crisis. But still, we will have a result in 3 years, not in 3 months. So we should use existing treaty and solution like six-pack, you know, six pieces of legislation, improving economic governance. So we should not have any other answer for that. And if we open the treaty for limited changes, you never know what will happen and what kind of proposal could arise. So we must be very careful about that. I can understand proposals. They could be justified. But is there no atmosphere in the European Union for any treaty change? So it is a very difficult question, and I think we have a simple answer. To tackle the problem on the basis of existing treaty, we can do a lot. Second, it was about my country. And maybe it is slightly wider question, because, you know, one and a half year ago, spring 2010, I went to Greece just on those days when they had to take decisions on austerity measures and reforms. I went to the parliament and I've been involved in heavy discussion because they were against. I said, here is Prime Minister, by the way, he's socialist Prime Minister, I am from Christian Democracy. But I said, you should help them and support them, him, because the government and Prime Minister is doing what? Doesn't matter in such a moment which party we are for. Doesn't matter. Because we are trying to survive in Europe, with our euro. But I must tell you that it was not broad support, national understanding for the reforms. Half a year earlier, at the end of 2009, I was in Latvia. And the situation in Latvia was absolutely similar like in Greece. But they are not in Eurozone, so no help from any direction. And they took austerity measures, very tough, and reforms. And 2 years later, without strikes, I must tell you, they are in the path of growth. +3, +5. National debt is twice as much smaller than it was 2 years ago. It is possible, it means. The same is in Ireland. They have broad coalition in Ireland. I went to Ireland half a year ago. Also in the times when the decisions were taken. Because I'm interested to be in any European country where the heavy decision had to be taken. And they asked me to speak to the parliament. And I've done it. Of course I have my own experience because it was questioned about the board. Well, it was mentioned even many reforms in time of my as I had a leading position in my government. So, you know, if you decide on heavy reforms, you must know that probably people would like you very much. Because people hate reforms, you know very well. Any reforms. It was, for example, coal mining industry reform. In my region, Upper Silesia, as you said, Mr. Rector. And I had to close 22 coal mines, 120,000 people unemployed in few months in my constituency. You can imagine something like that. And you also mentioned, Mr. Rector, shipyard. Oh no, it was a question, shipyard. We haven't done the same in shipyard. We haven't restructuralized them at all. And what is the difference? Now, 10 years later, our coal mining industry, maybe it's not very good from point of view of climate issue, but it's a different question. Our coal mining industry is working very well. And it's a big net income to the national budget. 10 years later, without any help from outside, 120,000 unemployed in one region, in a few months. There's a cost. But for the next 10 years, everything working perfectly, I would say. It's not the same case in the shipyard. They were destroyed completely without destructuralization. So you can also always say, if you have courage as a politician to go ahead with reforms, you must know that next election you will lose. It was my case, of course. I lost the election completely. But I must tell you, it's not bad with our citizens all over the Europe. It's not bad, because 2.5 years later, I was elected in my country to the European Parliament with almost highest possible number of votes. And my colleagues from the same government, two or three of them, were on the top list together with me. So 2 or 3 years later, our citizens said, well, it was good, it was not so bad. And if you ask about Poland today, you must remember that we are after very difficult reforms. In the 90s, beginning of the 90s, very difficult reforms. And in the 90s and beginning of the century, also very difficult reforms. Without reforms, we cannot manage. It's the same case with Germany. Because 6, 7 years ago, you went through very different reforms, economic reforms in your country. Now you have a very, very strong economy. It's absolutely the same. But usually it's not very nice for governing party. For short-term period. For longer period, longer term, is also better. So it's an answer, if we can manage today with our crisis, of course we can. Of course. In Greece, yes, we can, absolutely. And I think a new government could manage the situation in Greece. Was also a question about consumption and crisis. Well, you know, it's in no comparison. A crisis in the West Europe today, in some countries, and crisis in Central Eastern Europe is no comparison. So, you know, was nothing to buy in the shops. Not having too much money is one thing, but not having possibility, so, you know. You are a very young generation, so you don't remember that, because you were those times in the 80s, even not primary school, but probably you were not born yet. So, you know, it was a lot of parcels, simple parcels coming to my country from abroad, from Germany, from France. Well, tens of thousands, and maybe together millions of parcels, with butter, with milk, with some sweet, because we haven't had any sweet, chocolate, not at all. So you cannot even imagine. Any fruit? No fruit. Well, it's difficult to say about the crisis today. It's no comparison. Because I was also very recently, as you know, in Libya. Well, we live here in Europe on a fantastic island or peninsula which is absolutely rich and happy in comparison with the rest of the world. I was also in Western Balkans, in Bosnia-Herzegovina, it's not very far away from here, from Serbia, Croatia. It's much better than in Northern Africa. But of course, there's no comparison with our countries. But of course, we should not even say something like that to our citizens. Why? Because they rightly expect more. I'm saying to young generation, because we are thinking about the future, how to rebuild Europe and to build even better Europe than today. Of course we can also. But if we are talking about crisis, we must know, and you probably can catch it and understand, that we live here in Europe in fantastic, beautiful place. Unbelievable. With real fantastic approach to each other. Openness. Dear friends, you are studying at Freiburg University from many European countries. You are not thinking about that. They were going without passport everywhere. But we should not take it as granted. No. You know, 12 centuries ago, it was a big Europe, Charlemagne, for 8 years. And they thought they had currency, one currency, from Finland to Portugal, from Ireland to Greece. One Europe. And if you see something in written form, they thought it's forever. No war, 8 years. One currency, you could go without problem everywhere in Europe. It was 8th and 9th century. But suddenly everything disappeared for next 1200 years. So we should not take it for granted. We should fight for that each day. We should believe each other, open ourselves on each other. It's so important to feel it. And we are community here in this hall, big enough to think about that and to promote these values in Europe. I wouldn't like to frighten you, but I wanted only to encourage you. And I feel that it's possible to achieve a lot, much more even than today, our beautiful Europe. Thank you very much.
Especially I want to thank Alexandra Poida and the staff of the Chair of Eastern European History who managed all this organization. Thank you.